From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, it's the last official weekend to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. A new study shows Texas is leaving a lot of cash on the table.
In Texas, that would translate into hundreds of millions of dollars.
East Texas is rocked by the mysterious death of Alfred Wright, causing many to worry about racial tensions in the area.
There's a lot of distrust, I think, right now.
And unequal pay based on gender discrimination. It's a campaign issue that's paying off for Wendy Davis.
The Abbott campaign and other Republican groups have had trouble finding their footing on this issue.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. As the March 31st Obamacare enrollment deadline approaches, the Obama administration is looking to make a last push to sign up the uninsured. Enrollment numbers in Texas are crucial to the Affordable Care Act's success, and Texas has been underperforming. Roughly 6 million Texans are uninsured, and signups have been lagging behind other states. Officials say that's due to the fact that state leaders have been actively working against the ACA. And a new study by the Kaiser Family Foundation shows that Texas is missing out on millions of dollars in federal subsidies that could support the local healthcare industry. Larry Levitt is the report's author, and he works for the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Well, there's been a lot of focus on the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. The Supreme Court allowed states the option of deciding whether to expand Medicaid or not. And that's been a controversial issue in the states and means that states not expanding are foregoing a lot of federal money. But the same is true of the private insurance subsidies as well. So these are people who are uninsured or buying their own insurance and have incomes up to four times the poverty level, which is about $94,000 a year for a family of four. Everyone is eligible in every state, no matter what the state decides. But some states have been much more invested in this program than others and have done a lot more to help people enroll. In Texas, the take-up rate or the number of people who are enrolling for these tax credits is a lot lower than in many other states in the U.S. average. So it means that there are fewer people qualifying and less money going to low- and middle-income people in the state.
Looking at the average subsidy that people are receiving when they sign up for the Affordable Care Act nationwide, $2,890. Texas, that's $2,440. We don't meet the national average, and we're certainly below California, where there was about $3,000, and also about $3,000 in Florida. So those two other states seem to be doing a much better job at getting people signed up and getting these subsidies into the hands of their citizens.
Yeah, the average subsidy is something of a good news, bad news story. Certainly the higher the subsidy is, the more help people are getting. And frankly, no matter where you are in the country, people are getting a lot of help here. I mean, we're talking about $2,000 to $3,000 in most states to help people pay their premiums every year. But the actual amount of the average subsidy is related to the income of people in the state, the age of people who are enrolling, since older people have higher premiums and get larger subsidies, but also the underlying cost of health care and the cost of health insurance in the state. In Texas, even though Texas decided not to run their own health insurance exchange, and state officials have certainly been opposed to Obamacare generally, but in fact the bids from insurance companies came in lower in Texas than in many other states. So big reason why the average subsidy is lower than the national average is because premiums came in lower as well. So people just don't have to pay as much.
Any idea why those bids came in so low in Texas?
Well, I think that, there's a good amount of competition among insurers in the state, and there's a lot of uninsured people in Texas. So, insurers looked at that market and decided it was a way to get more business. So they found it an attractive market.
So the idea, I guess, was to come in with a low price to entice people to sign up, but still Texans don't seem to be doing that in droves.
Yeah, and I think it's there are a number of factors for that. I mean, certainly Texas is not running its own exchange, and states that are running their own exchanges have done a much better job of getting people signed up.
Because they do a lot more marketing.
Yeah, exactly. They're more invested in the law. They're doing more marketing. And through a quirk in the law, states that run their own exchanges have access to federal grant dollars that allow them to do more marketing and provide more assistance to consumers to help them sign up. You know, a number of states have actually turned away that money, and the federal government just doesn't have the resources to put into marketing, so they've been somewhat hampered. I think also, you know, the state-by-state numbers aren't available on the race and ethnicity of people who are signing up, but California is one state that has reported that, and enrollment among Latinos in particular is lagging well behind what they represent within the uninsured population. And I would guess the same thing is true, if not even more true, in other border states like Texas. So you know, I think the fact that a lot of the uninsured are disproportionately Latino in Texas may introduce some bigger challenges.
So compared to some of the states like California and Florida, who are doing well with the Affordable Care Act, how much money did Texas lose out on that could have been applied to the healthcare system, which, when you have a better, more robust healthcare system, you're able to provide better health services to many more people? So how much do we lose?
We didn't do a precise estimate state by state. Nationally, it's over $8 billion that states are leaving on the table that they would be getting if they were enrolling people at the same rate as the most successful states. In Texas, that would translate into hundreds of millions of dollars.
Larry Levitt is with the Kaiser Family Foundation. He's the author of a report, How Much Financial Assistance Are People Receiving Under the Affordable Care Act? 28-year-old Alfred Wright went missing on November 7th. 18 days later, his body was found in a wooded area of East Texas. The discovery was not by proper authorities, but by his father and supporting friends who were conducting their own search when the Sabine County Sheriff's Department had called off theirs. The mysterious death of Wright, who was an African American, has hit a raw nerve in the Jasper, Texas area. Many in the black community are convinced there was foul play, that Wright was murdered, and the sheriff is involved in an elaborate cover-up. Others say there was no crime and that Wright died of a drug overdose. There is an atmosphere of distrust, fear, pure hatred, generations of racial difficulties, and a past of grotesque violence. It's all bubbling to the surface. Patrick Michaels has written about it for the Texas Observer.
One of the reasons why his story has caught on so much is because you know, it happened in a rural part of the state where there's a history of you know, discrimination, or maybe folks who disappeared, or you know, some police brutality in some big cases as well, but a lot of smaller cases too. And this is the first big case in a while. It's attached a lot of other. A lot of other folks have kind of jumped on board with their own stories of having problems with local cops and just not feeling safe. And so there are sort of two levels. You know, there's the details of what happened in Alfred Wright's case and confusion and concern about how the cops have handled that. And then, you know, sort of the general concern folks have in the black community about the way that white cops, you know, kind of go about their business and sort of a lack of progress, you know, over the last few decades.
So this is in the Jasper area, of course, an area that's known for the dragging death of James Byrd and Ku Klux Klan activity out there.
Yeah, and it's hard to know just how big that is. I mean, the it got most dramatic at a rally in Hemphill in Sabine County when the family has gotten help from the New Black Panther Party out of Houston to kind of march through the town square with guns and call out the sheriff and say a lot of, you know, inflammatory type of stuff. It's, you know, trying to get a rise out of folks. And in response to that, someone who claimed to represent members of the Klan went up to one of the local guys in town and said, hey, if you have a rally the next week, we'll have the Klan out here and a bunch of other groups. And that never materialized, but there was kind of that threat, you know. And after James Byrd's death, there was sort of this face-off in the street in Jasper between the Panthers and the Klan. And so a lot of folks were worried that was going to happen here. So far, that hasn't been the case, but there's still kind of that threat.
The Wright family has taken some criticism from the public about their being associated with the new Black Panther Party, and saying that they're ratcheting up the antagonism and the tension. But I don't know, when you figure that the law enforcement has clearly not been working in your favor, who else do you have to turn to?
I mean, without knowing, you know, what happened or if law enforcement, you know, I mean, what their investigation is going to turn up, at this point, they're not saying anything, and they're saying it's because they can't. And so the family really feels like they have nowhere else left to turn. And they've been working with a law firm in Beaumont for a while. And now they're on sort of their own charge to get some keep the attention on the case, and they're going with whatever activists they feel like are going to support them the best. And the Panthers have been out there in a bunch of rallies for them to try and, you know, keep the heat up. And, you know, cameras show up when Klan LX does too.
The area, is it isolated? Does it seem to be a throwback to an earlier era?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to the activists in Houston, the civil rights activists, you know, they're saying that's what's so scary about this, is a deep East Texas area that, you know, that hasn't really had to, you know, grow up with the civil rights movement in the way that bigger cities have. You know, and Hemphill especially, which is about an hour north of Jasper, 45 minutes or so, is a lot less diverse. It's you know, really mostly white. Jasper is closer to 50-50, white and black. So, you know, and it's out kind of in the middle of nowhere. The closest big markets, Beaumont TV has really been covering this, and you know, it's about an hour from Jasper to Beaumont. You know, double that to get up to Hemphill. So it is really kind of out there. And, you know, the biggest thing is that the folks in Hemphill say, you know, this is, you know, it's an isolated case and they feel bad, but they have a hard time seeing kind of what all the, you know, commotion's about.
What about the criminal investigation? The Sabine County Sheriff's Department, they're saying that it was not a murder, that it was a drug overdose. But Alfred Wright apparently was a personal trainer and did not apparently take drugs.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty conclusive if you look at the toxicology report in the official autopsy that there was a level of cocaine that was really high and a high level of meth as well. So just based on that, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of doubt there unless you're willing to doubt, you know, that tox report too. But the ranger who's investigating the case has told me that they have an open criminal investigation. You know, what that investigation is about exactly isn't really clear. You know, if they're talking about who sold the drugs to him, if that's the case, or if it was, you know, the people. I mean, his family is pretty convinced that, you know, there was some kind of murder that, you know, someone put the drugs in him or told him to take them or there was some other sort of, you know, more nefarious thing. But at this point, it's not really clear just what kind of criminal investigation there is.
And what about the body mutilations?
Yeah, I mean, that's another one. I mean, it's hard to be totally sure. I mean, one of the biggest, most confusing things about this case is people were saying that his neck had been cut and slit, and then that sort of got blown up into these big headlines. And that wasn't in the official autopsy, and the family hired another pathologist who's putting her report together but has never said that either. So that's coming from people who've seen photos of the body, maybe even after that first autopsy was done, and saying they see a cut on the neck, and that they're saying that was clear mutilation that was done before he died. There were other things that were like missing fingernails and teeth. That were attributed to insect activity in that autopsy report. And I've talked to other doctors who say, well, that's kind of strange. You wouldn't see that necessarily. You know, they'd go after soft tissue, like eyes and tongue, and those were missing as well. But there are some strange things about what you know, animal activity supposedly did.
Well, there is the theory that Alfred Wright was having an affair with the daughter of the sheriff. It was an interracial affair. Any truth to that?
Well, it sure doesn't look like it. I mean, if you're asking about the truth of the rumors of that affair, there's, you know, the daughter of the sheriff is one of a few white women who have kind of been mentioned in the same sort of stories. And, you know, in every case, they're saying, well, that's not true. And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of evidence to support that apart from, you know, somebody saw them eating at Subway together or something like that, or they worked together. So, you know, then you have to make the next big leap. So it's, you know, there's really not any clear evidence that that's the case. But, you know, it's one of those things where in the absence of any other story that makes sense, you know, you kind of go with whatever seems like it might fit.
But it seems like there's a lot of circumstances that are fueling the powder keg here of a lot of mistrust for local law enforcement. There's racial tension, extramarital affairs, rumors. There's a potential here for quite a flare-up.
Yeah, it really seems like it. And one of the things that, I mean, you really got that sense that they had a rally in Jasper with the church, and some of James Byrd's family came and sort of knelt and prayed with the Wright family. And there was this sense of, you know, history repeating itself almost, and you know, bring the community together, bring the black community in Jasper together in a way that, you know, they hadn't in 15 years or so, is sort of a, you know, an important coming together moment outside of the details of the case. You know, but there's certainly a lot of distrust, you know, of law enforcement, the way that they've treated the family and kind of been closed on what kind of information they would give out, what kind of questions they would answer. There's a lot of distrust, I think, right now.
Patrick Michaels is a reporter for the Texas Observer. He wrote the article, Fight for Wright, which looks at the death of Alfred Wright in East Texas. The article is on the website texasobserver.org. Texas Democratic candidate for governor Wendy Davis continues to score political points with the issue of pay discrimination based on sex. Now Democrats in the Texas Senate have formally requested the Lieutenant Governor's Office to investigate pay discrimination for women in state agencies, including the Attorney General's Office, which happens to be run by Davis's opponent for governor, Greg Abbott. Davis is making equal pay a central issue in her race for governor. And Cal Gilson, professor of political science at Southern Methodist University, says this issue of pay is paying off for Davis.
Oh, I think it is an issue that works because the Davis campaign is depending upon a broad set of women's issues to put female voters, particularly moderate suburban female voters, in play in this gubernatorial election. And the issue that she's best known for in that set of women's issues is the abortion issue, which is hard to have as a focus for a Democrat running for governor of Texas. So she needs a broader set of women's issues, and pay equality is an ideal issue for her to run on. And as we've seen over the course of the last week or 10 days, the Abbott campaign and other Republican groups have had trouble finding their footing on this issue.
And Wendy Davis was able to take this into Abbott's own office as the attorney general and show that there was inequality and that there's a pay gap based on gender and race inside the office.
Yeah, there were a series of newspaper articles about a week ago running several days that took the 300 or so lawyers in the attorney general's office and broke them up by gender, male versus female, and race, Anglo, black, and Hispanic, and showed that male lawyers made about $5,000 a year more than female lawyers did, and Anglo lawyers made more than black and Hispanic lawyers did. And so that took it right in to Abbott's backyard. And, of course, Abbott came back and said, look, the reason for those differentials is not gender discrimination. It's that the male lawyers have been in the office longer, have a little bit more experience than the female lawyers do. But anytime in politics, there's an old phrase, anytime you're explaining, you're losing. It means that the issue doesn't cut naturally for you. You've got to try to back your opponent off. So it was a good week on these pay equality issues for the Davis campaign that had many weeks – that weren't so good when she was trying to deal with issues about her biography. So this has let her get back on her footing again.
And Wendy Davis had sponsored a bill that did get passed in the last legislature that would have made it easier for women to sue over gender pay discrimination issues. That was vetoed by Governor Rick Perry. And then Greg Abbott goes on a record and says he also would have vetoed that bill. So that just adds more to her her attack.
Yeah, that's right. There is a national law called the Lilly Ledbetter law, passed very early in the Obama administration, that changed the pay equity laws to allow women to sue not just in the first 90 days or something after a case of inequitable pay comes up, but because a woman might not know for a long time that she's receiving less pay than similarly qualified male workers are. And so the Lilly Ledbetter law opened up the federal courts to pay equity suits that hadn't previously been allowed. Texas does not have a similar law, and Wendy Davis tried to get a law passed through the Texas legislature to give women access to Texas courts, which are far more numerous, easier to deal with for Texas women. And that law made it through both the Texas House and Senate, but was vetoed by Governor Perry on the argument that it was just another regulation that would limit business to no good effect because women could sue in federal courts. Abbott said he agreed with that. But I think Davis has some real momentum here in arguing that federal courts are difficult for women to gain standing in and to bring cases in. It's very expensive. And that these are Texas women, Texas courts should be open to them. And she's been making some headway with that argument.
So these arguments and these cases that she's building up, it's always great when you can do that and you get new nice ink in the newspaper and you get on TV. But does it bring you new voters? Is she able to pluck off some of the voters out that would have voted for Abbott and come over and vote for her instead?
Well, it's possible. Nobody's voting today. Between Davis and Abbott. They'll be doing that in November. So she's got to get from here to there with a series of women's issues that make Texas women who have voted Republican in the past at least look at her, listen to her, and think about whether she's talking about a set of issues that they have a real interest in. So the Davis campaign feels like for it to be competitive, it's got to win not just black votes and Hispanic votes and the 30% of the Anglo vote that Democrats normally win, but they've got to win over some traditional Republican voters, and female, moderate, suburban women are their target. And pay equity is one of the issues that they think professional women, women who are out in the workforce, will listen to and say, look, if I wasn't getting paid equally with male counterparts, I would want to have every tool available to me to try to redress that grievance. I want to see Texas have the equivalent of a Lilly Ledbetter law. At least that's what the Davis campaign hopes suburban moderate women will think.
So they're getting dividends out of this line of attack. So they're not going to let it go. But how come Greg Abbott has not been more adept at neutralizing this?
Well, Greg Abbott, as the Attorney General, has said very consistently that he is responsible for advocating and defending Texas laws. That's the Attorney General's job. And he has also said that he supports Governor Perry's business-friendly approach to politics in Texas, that we need to keep taxes low and regulation light, and allowing women more opportunities to sue businesses would limit their profitability in Texas and cost jobs. That is an attractive argument for Texas men. It's less attractive for Texas women if it means that women who are being discriminated against aren't going to have the full tool bag to try to redress that discrimination. So the Davis campaign hopes that women will say, we like what Davis is saying about pay equity. The Abbott campaign hopes that Texas men and many Texas women will say, we want this business-friendly environment that has led to rapid job creation to continue. So women already have access to federal courts. We don't feel like they need the similar access to Texas courts, and we'll see who wins that argument.
But political watchers are looking at these campaigns and sizing them up. Wendy Davis brought on a new communications team after her missteps that she had about her bio and things. And they seem a lot more sharp and on the ball. And they're the one that got this attack going with the unequal pay, gender-based discrimination for pay. And we're looking at Abbott, and they're not able to responding, and they're looking like the amateurs.
Yeah, that's right. And Abbott's team are not amateurs by any stretch of the imagination. Dave Carney is their chief strategist, and he's worked in Texas politics for 20, 25 years. He has worked on Rick Perry's campaigns and was involved in the brief Perry campaign for president. So he goes all the way back into the George W. Bush gubernatorial years. So he knows the ground here, but Republicans run the danger that they have been so successful over the last 20 years or so that they just take the old issues and the old attack lines and go through the motions. And now they're up against the Davis campaign, which, while it's had some missteps, is an energetic campaign. It's an attractive campaign to many people. It's raising money in large amounts, both inside and outside Texas. So it's going to give the Republican campaigns a run for its money. And the Republicans are going to have to shake off the cobwebs and get serious about combating Davis, because she's certainly serious about coming after him.
Well, they did counterpunch, and that was an accusation or revelation, a disclosure that Senator Davis was cashing in on bond work, as they put it, and they call it an ethical issue, that she was using her position as a state senator to represent people who could benefit from laws that she could pass.
Yeah, that charge has been expected for quite some time. The two issues that analysts expected that the Abbott campaign would attack the Davis campaign on were her biography, which they did to good effect a couple of months ago, and these ethical questions about whether a person who is in the legislature and voting on, say, transportation development issues is then ethically compromised if they're also a bond lawyer, as Wendy Davis is. She has a firm with Brian Newby, who is a former chief of staff to Governor Perry. So it's a Democrat-Republican firm that brings bonds to market, does the legal back office work so that bonds can be offered to the public. And so the difficulty that charge has is that Texas is so shot through. Texas politics is so shot through with conflicts of interest that picking out this one conflict of interest to challenge Davis with looks like campaign politics, because there's so much else in terms of ethical compromises to criticize in Texas politics that I'm not sure this charge is going to stick all that well.
Cal Gilson is one of the nation's foremost political experts. He is a professor of political science at Southern Methodist University. He's the author of Lone Star Tarnished. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. You can write to Texas Matters with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, or you can write directly on our show page at tpr.org, and that's where you can hear past Texas Matters programs. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.